It is definitely like a form of acceptance that, I mean, listen, if you had a bunch of straight dudes with khakis saying, we love your comedy, you something's wrong.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast where we ask, whose fault is it that you're gay? I'm Eric Williams, and today we're actually bringing in a straight. If you can imagine, I did give a caveat in this podcast description by saying we might ask a straight ally, why are you so obsessed with us? And today I grill the shit out of Nicole Thurman. I have to tell you, I only bring a straight person on this podcast when I really feel like they have a devoted fan base in the queer community. And Nicole Thurman is that person. You've probably seen her videos online. The reason why I fell in love with her was from Twitter. She's so funny. And there's a video that I posted on the podcast Instagram that is your face after the Zoom call ends. And it's basically just like, okay, see you later. And then full devastation. If you haven't, check it out, an AKS podcast. It's so good. And this conversation, let me just tell y'all, it was such soul food. Like, we of course have laughs, but damn, we had such a good connection, and I walked away feeling better than I did when we started it. I do want to welcome any new listeners that came from my TikTok video. Hi, y'all are nasty. No, I'm kidding. It's just I posted a video explaining the website that Chris Burns and I talked about last week in the episode called jackinworld.com, and I just listed some of the techniques that this website provided. Some of my favorites include sock, bag, and tube, the baggie and the mattress, the foo-foo, the tubo sweetness, the pasta plaything bubblish. I mean, Jesus H, it's all so much, but I'm happy you're here, and I guess I should send a letter to jackinworld.com's probably, you know, 80-year-old site owner for the service that they have given to us. I do want to give you an update on
me, myself, and it's all right.
I went up a couple millies. That's the update. Lexi is working hard in my body, and I'm at 12.5, so continue to stay tuned on that. And listen up for that bonus in the Patreon episode on this week's fight, where Matt and I debate a plethora of things. I do want to tell you about Nicole before I launch into the discussion. Nicole, you've seen her on television in a Black Lady sketch show on HBO, Shrill on Hulu, The Opposition with Jordan Klepper, Grace and Frankie is coming up. You can also hear her on HBO Max right now in Jellystone, and you can hear her on her amazing new podcast, The Scroll Down, with Marcela Arguello. Come for the laughs, stay for the soul food, and then continue to listen for our talk about gay icons in the last half of this conversation. Here she is, world, Nicole Thurman. Behind the scenes moment, we're recording this on a Sunday, if you can imagine, and I rode my bike to get home, and you would think I just did a triathlon, like a full-on 50 miles. I'm fully drenched in sweat. I'm so out of shape. Guess how many minutes I rode this bike.
How many? Wait, should I guess? Actually, guess?
I want you to guess.
Eight. Was that right?
8 minutes.
8 minutes!
How did you do that? Are you an empath? Are you like a medium?
I don't think I am, but I do have, my instincts are very good. Like, so maybe that is kind of an empath or a medium, but like recently I had a friend who was sick for like 2 weeks that I don't even really talk to him that much. And when he reached out and was like, yeah, I've been sick for the last 2 weeks, I was like, I knew something was wrong. Like, you know what I mean? Like he doesn't even post online a lot or anything like that. I just knew it. Like, I always get these like feelings about people.
You're so, like, I'm not an empath, but I did speak to a dead person 3 days ago. Does that mean anything?
Yeah, I did say what's up to a dead person. Like, someone did visit me in my apartment and say they needed me to reach out to their grandson. But other than that, no, normal. Everything's normal.
You're like, they're actually doing really well on the other side. I actually was talking to someone, like, and randomly ghosts came up in conversation, and I was like, have you ever had an experience? And they're like, the only one I can think of is this girl has been following me for 25 years. I was like,
that's an experience. That's not an experience. The only one you could think of. It's not a little thing.
Yeah, she's like, yeah. And I was like, wait, are you talking like house to house? Like from locale to locale? She was like, yeah, wherever I go, she goes. And I was like, I believe in ghosts, but yeah, I don't know if I want one for that long.
No, I would never want one for that long, because then you would be having to double think everything you were doing, like in private and everywhere you were going. I'm getting like a little fuzzy, little fog on my glasses because I'm hot.
Or because it's a ghost.
Or there's a ghost. Maybe this is a ghost in the bottom of my glasses saying, stop talking about me, bitch. Like, I'm supposed to be a secret. No, but yeah, that would be, I would never want a ghost following me around for 25 years. I feel like at one point you should maybe ask it what it needs to go away, or maybe phone in someone else, phone a friend, have them figure out what the ghost needs if you can't do it.
Do you think, well, here, the first question is, do you believe in spirits?
I think that, I guess I do kind of. I never really know how to answer that, because it's like, I don't believe in like ghosts necessarily, but I do believe in like, I do think that when people die, they kind of become like parts of the earth, and like they have little things, you know, little moments. Yes. So I think that, yeah, like there's something that I feel like that's like,
there's got to be something. Yeah. I don't know what it, I mean, like, because that's also weird. I don't know why religion keeps coming up in this podcast, because it truly is a full on gay podcast. But like, I just been thinking a lot about like what we are raised as believing. Like, Jewish people are raised to think that there is no hell.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there is heaven. Or, oh God, I'm sure a Jewish person's going to like message me and be like, you're actually completely wrong. I think it's maybe that we, you know, I think that is, there's no hell. And then like, yeah. I think what, when you're dead, you're dead.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was. I always thought there was no heaven or hell, but then when you're dead, you're dead. But I didn't. But they think that they're, I'm technically Jewish, but not at all religious, even in the slightest. So I can't even claim it. But I never, like, I always thought it was no heaven or hell, but there is a heaven, just not a hell.
Nicole, I think you're right. I think there's nothing. I think there's no and no.
No and no.
But I can't imagine Jews being like, and then it's over. It's like, no, I'm sure they got this. They're going to complain somewhere else. It just doesn't matter where is it.
Right. There's got to be something. I don't know. I always think
so. Is one of your parents Jewish?
My mom is Jewish, yes.
So, and then you were not super observant growing up?
No, she's not. She, like, my aunt and uncle are way more religious, and my cousins, but like my mom has never been super religious. We celebrated Hanukkah. That was about as Jewish as we got.
But listen, wait, this is so interesting to me, because I'm married to someone who grew up Catholic. Uh-huh. And so the day we have kids, we're definitely going to be doing Christmas. We're definitely going to be doing Hanukkah. But like, did you celebrate Christmas and Hanukkah?
Yeah, we did. We always had a Christmas tree, and we always did Hanukkah. Mm-hmm.
So wait, nice. This is amazing, Nicole. The universe sent you to me. So mm-hmm. what was when you were growing up? Is it just like obviously very normalized? Like, yes, you know, we celebrate this, we celebrate this. As a kid, what were your attitudes towards Christmas versus Hanukkah? Were just like, I love both holidays, or did it differ in any way?
I think it's hard, because it's like Christmas is so huge, and I think my mom is kind of like, not necessarily in a bad way, just kind of, it's her personality. She's much more like, she's from New York, but she wanted to kind of assimilate to Midwest culture when she moved to Kansas. And so I think like, we always just thought of that as part of our life. Like, this is Christmas. Like, Christmas is a thing we do, but also we're Jewish. So we're going to learn how to sing these songs and light some candles and things like that. And we went to like a temple preschool. Like, it was just weird. But I don't know. I never thought of it as like, Christmas is dominating, but we're supposed to be celebrating. Like, and I never thought of it as like one outruled the other one, or like weighed more heavily. They're both kind of just both there.
I really love that. I have to tell you that this came up recently, that I'm going to, you know, my parents are amazing and like, et cetera. However, I was talking to a friend last night that like a year or two before Matt and I got married, my parents out of the woodwork were like, and you know what? When you have kids, you're going to have to be pretty direct with them about like making sure they really enjoy the Jewish holidays in addition to the Christmas stuff. And I honestly got a little frustrated, because I was like, A, they're going to be happy with whatever. If it's a holiday, it's a holiday, And if the parents enjoy, then they're going to take away the attitude that we. And it also felt like I've been with Matt for 6 years. And so I was like, couldn't this have come up like, I don't know, half a decade ago?
Right.
But so when it did come up, I was like, y'all, I think it's just them not being used to the fact that there's going to be competing traditions. And so I think in their mind, it was honestly like, I was about to say like, between you and me, Nicole, but listen, this literally is a podcast where people listen to it. But like, between all of us listening, I do think that my parents were just in their own way trying to tell me that it's important to them that if I have children, that at least I get to impart some of the traditions that I grew up with. And that's, of course, my aim. I really love my traditions. And so they communicated that in their way. But it's so amazing to hear from you that you just had both and that's what it was. And you didn't prioritize or value one over the other. And that's exactly how I envision it for my kids.
Yeah. And I think that I think it's, you know, it's possible for Christmas to run over Hanukkah, but I think it's like, it is all in the mindset of the parents for sure. And how important the traditions are to the parents. And I think if you like instill a solid sense of Judaism in your kids, they're not going to, you know, they're going to have respect for that and reverence for that. I don't think they're going to be like, oh man, now we got to do the Jewish stuff this weekend. You know, like they're not going to do that. They're going to be excited about it.
Jewish shit. Fucking Daddy Eric sucks. I want to go to Christmas Town with me.
Yeah, Daddy Eric sucks. Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't think it would be like that. I think it's fun, and I think it's important to celebrate both sides of your heritage. I mean, listen, I'm half black, half white, Jewish, you know, and, you know, it's just like, it's an interesting, like, you want to acknowledge all of the things that you are, and I don't think that I ever grew up being like, and I think, obviously, the more your parents are, like, excited about it and teaching you about it, the more excited about it you would be at growing up. You wouldn't be like, oh, yeah, like, why we have to do that? You know what I mean? Yeah. You wouldn't be like that. I didn't mean to say that, but that's just what came out. But, yeah, you wouldn't be like, oh, yeah, we have to be, you know, doing Hanukkah now. No. I think it's like, they can all be fun.
But I think it's also, like you're saying, is embracing all the parts of you. If when it comes from a place of happiness and positivity from you, like the fact that you're from Kansas, too, is kind of amazing because I'm from St. Louis, Missouri. And then you live in New York, but you're currently in L.A., right?
Well, I live in L.A., but I've been staying in New York. I'm kind of all over the place because what happened was I used to live in New York. And then I moved back to I mean, I kind of go back and forth because of work. And then I hadn't been anywhere since, you know, 2020, the beginning of 2020. I went to New York on vacation and it was the first trip I had taken. And I was like, oh my God, I don't want to leave. Because it was just the energy. I know it sounds cheesy, but like the energy was so much better there. Mm. Being around people again. All of the time, like when you could just like walk and wander and have these experiences with people. And I mean, I just love New York. It's like a city where I just feel like I blossom a lot when I'm there and I'm very happy and spiritually fulfilled. So like, I just didn't want to leave. So anyway, I ended up just like subletting a place and I'm like, I'm still there technically. So I'm just here for work. I'm in LA right now and I'm here for work, but I'm going to go back to New York for September. And I'm kind of just like seeing how it plays out. I'm not sure yet. So I'm kind of like doing bi-coastal life and it's amazing. I love
Listen, Nicole, this is what you're doing is you're living the dream. That's what you're doing. Oh my gosh. True. And also New York in September is like one of the best months here. I mean, it's like so beautiful and like, you know, it's a hellscape a lot of the other months, but if you're here for the beautiful months, then like, why not do that? That's like, I think that's my ultimate dream is to just follow the beauty.
My thing is I love to like start, it sounds maybe cheesy, but I love it. Like starting a day and not knowing what you're doing and then like, you know, ending up at the Met, you know, or like, I mean, I don't, you know, it's not regular, but it's like when you just have a day and you're kind of like, I don't know, I'm just going to like go for a walk and see what happens. And like, you know, when I go to a bar and meet a bartender and new friends that are just sitting at the bar having drinks and relaxing and you eat food with people that you don't know. And like, they don't have that kind of culture doesn't exist in LA. It just doesn't.
I also think, do you think this is a hot take that when you go to a place that you don't spend all of your time in, it's not that we romanticize it, but we automatically find the things that we're missing in our current, like when I go to LA, I'm like, fuck, this is it. This is like, there's hiking. I can sit outside. New York is a piece of shit. But I think that I tend to, for myself, fixate on what I don't have. And when I go to the other place, that's like, okay, what's coming to mind right now is that I was talking to a friend that I forget the context, but basically like the idea of cheating on your partner came up of just like, I think what sometimes people do is that if they're in a long-term relationship and they meet someone that like has a quality that their partner doesn't, they automatically think that that person has everything they're actually supposed to have and that their partner they're with is not giving them what they need and fuck them and we're going to break up. And then inevitably what I think happens a lot of times is that you break up with your partner, you go to the new person, and then of course there's all these issues with the new person, and then you end up that ends very quickly. And then you're like, oh, wait a minute. Maybe I don't actually know what I want. So I think that can kind of happen with where you're living too. Is that a crazy thing to say?
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, it's always the grass is always greener. It's always like that. And that's what's funny is like, because I since I used to live in New York, everybody's like, why don't you just move back? Like, come on, move back here. All my friends, they always say it. Even if I'm there for one day, I think it's a very New York thing to be like, come back to us. You know you want to live in New York. Mm-hmm. It's New York. And you're like, I know it's New York. I love it too. I do think it's very much that. And I think that's also part of the reason. Because, like, honestly, like, back in the day, I probably would have just been like, yeah, you're right. I'm going to move back to New York. And it's like, no. Right now, I'm just going to enjoy working remotely from New York. And then, like, they flew me back here to finish the job in L.A. And I'm going to enjoy being able to do that for a few months. Because, yeah, it is really, like... And that's the thing with the partners and with cheating is like, I was telling my sister this the other day. It's like, everybody takes shits. Everybody nasty. You know, like everybody, like, you know what I mean? Like, after 2 months, that like sexy young thing you're fucking on the side is going to like fart in front of you. And you're going to be like, oh, they're disgusting. Just like my partner. Like,
wait a minute. You shit too? Fuck.
Everybody, all these hot ass people be shitting. And then it's like, they're not hot anymore. And that's just like... part of the example of like everybody turns into trash after a while. And yeah, like New York, like if I stayed in the winter, maybe I would be like, oh my God, or, you know, have some crazy encounter on the train or some kind of thing, that one thing that reminds you of like, oh yeah, this is what I hated when I lived here.
Yeah. Oh man, that's so true. Because I will have moments where like you're walking through Washington Square Park on a gorgeous fall day and you're like, why would I ever leave this place? I'm going to become rich and old and be 95 years old walking through Bleecker Street with my... It's like you just only envision the good times, and the next thing you know, someone is taking a shit on you next to you on the subway and you're like, why would I ever spend another fucking minute in this place? Like, I have to tell you, I've had a couple of stories, and the thing is, I've been here for a long time, and any city you're gonna have horrible moments. But I was walking with my friend through Brooklyn. I was living in Brooklyn. We were meeting some friends at a bar. Yeah. And we walked, funnily enough, by a church, and this guy stopped us, and he very nonchalantly said, you know, I have a gun in my jacket, so give me your money. And we were like, okay, sure. So then I luckily had like $7 in my wallet. So I was like, of course, like here is all the money. And then my friend I was with, who is listening to this right now and knows who they are, but I won't say their name to protect the innocent. This person... had like a 10 and a 5 and a $20 bill. And I watched him put his hand in his wallet. And the guy with the had a long jacket says, I have a gun in my pocket and I've used it before. And so I watched my friend put his finger through his wallet and skim over the 20 just to give him the 10 and the 5. And the guy was like, no, give me all of it.
Now's not the time to get a deal.
We're not bargaining. This is not what's the closet? This is not Beacon's closet. This is
not Beacon's closet.
I was like, it's a man. He gave all of his money, and then we go to the bar and we tell our friend what just happened. And I, of course, immediately start weeping. So I was just like, felt so violated and just like, And I was like, I hate this city. I hate being here. Why would I choose this place? And like, and of course, after a day or two, I was able to, you know, calm down and be like, I love New York and everything is fine. But it's the grass is greener is so true. And I have to tell myself that your problems can't be fixed by one move or one little change.
Yes. One move is not going to change your life. It's not going to make everything better. And it's like, I didn't even think that I had that many. I didn't think anything was wrong in LA. That's the other thing is like, I didn't think that I was having a bad time, but I think the pandemic and how isolating it can be here. It's like, yes, granted, we had a nice situation where we had hiking and the beach year round and outdoor dining. It was never a problem for us, like that stuff. So that was great. And I felt lucky to be in LA, and a lot of people left LA during the pandemic, which was great, because then you get to Santa Monica in 2 minutes. But like, I think what I didn't realize was that the isolation of LA and the loneliness of the city, it like multiplied during the pandemic and becomes so much worse. So yeah, then when you go to New York, you're like, oh my God. But yeah, it's that same thing of, because people always ask me, people are always like, do you like New York or LA better? Because I've lived in both. And I'm like, I honestly can't say. It's not that I think I would skew more toward New York, but neither city is perfect. They both have things that I absolutely cannot stand about them. And that's just what it is, because they're just not, I mean, any massive city is going to piss you off.
And
time.
I will say, like, if we, I mean, like, and I, you have truly such an amazing career. And like, hopefully have billions of dollars. But if you don't have billions, then I'm like, I think New York and LA, if you are filthy fucking rich.
Mm-hmm.
Both those cities are a dream. I think, like, absolutely. Again, you will find the issues, but actually, this is a good. Okay, let's say money is not an issue.
Yeah.
But you can only purchase a home in either New York or LA. I really don't know my answer, Nicole.
I think mine would be New York, because it's like, if money wasn't an issue, I would get a nice.
Oh, that's true. I did say that money's not an issue. Like, yeah. Andy Cohen, I'm sure, has from what I've been told and seen, Andy Cohen has a stunning home, but mm-hmm. I'm sure the amount of money he paid on that versus something he would pay for whatever. Nicole, we're talking about LA versus New York. This is like the most like basic, but like, it's just, I just like to fantasize about being rich one day, because I can't allow myself to believe that I'll have this amount of money forever. Cause that's not it.
No. And that's the way to think about it. It's better to think about that than being like, it's either going to be like this or worse in the future, because then you're going to be stressed out all the time. There's no way.
Mm-hmm.
I used to think like that. I used to always be so worried about it. I would be so worried in between jobs about like, where's the next dollar gonna come from? And then it's like, after a while, I stopped doing that, because I was like, Nicole, you're gonna get a job. You always get a job. So stop doing this to yourself between every freaking job. And then I started like just being able to be happier and more like stable in a way mentally.
How'd you do it? How'd you do it? What's your secret?
I think it was literally just that of like, what's the point? Like, what's the point of always worrying? I think it's also like learning to not beat yourself up in the in-between times in life. You know what? That's what I really hate. This is like a random thought, but like lately I've been seeing these posts on like Instagram mostly, because Instagram is like the fakest social media still mm-hmm. that we have. But I've been seeing these posts where it's like, you know, don't give up. I was going to give up and then I got my dream job and now I'm telling you not to give up. It's like, okay, but would you be fucking telling us that if you had not gotten your dream job? Probably not.
And that's the thing. It's like, some of those infographics,
right,
while they are well-meaning, are mm-hmm. sometimes not like, oh, you know what's so crazy is that I the other day saw one of those things that was talking about, I think either talking about burnout or like talking about yeah. some sort of labeled thing. And it was like, if you have these feelings right now, you could be suffering from, it was probably more high stakes than burnout. It was like a pretty intense thing. And I read through all of them and I was like, you know what? That was just the human condition. It's like, if you're feeling exhausted, if you're feeling like, you know, at the end of the day, you just need to unplug. I'm like, that's any person breathing mm-hmm. air and yeah. expending any energy. It was like, mm-hmm. the thing is, I do believe in, of course, like energy and the universe and mantras. I believe in all of that shit. But I think that sometimes Instagram especially can force, just because they make it look pretty, it's not coming from a psychiatrist or a therapist. It's coming from a 19-year-old in Albuquerque that's really good at graphic design. And the content yeah. of the actual infographic is not actually going to be helpful to you. And like, this is all preaching to the choir, because I've just been really trying to be mindful of how I like spend my time on the internet. And like, am I succeeding? No, but...
Right.
I had a conversation with Marsha Belsky on this podcast about chiropractor videos, because it really lessens my anxiety. And then I had a conversation with a friend of mine who is a physical therapist, and she like mm-hmm. was so lovely about telling me that she likes watching them too. It's really good for anxiety. It's really cathartic. But these mm-hmm. chiropractors, a lot of them are bad. And I mean,
the shit they're doing looks crazy. Can't
like,
be right.
It can't, like, you have a rope attached to a hook. They put the rope around your neck. They pull your head out of your body. And it's like, right. Listen, I want to feel my crack from my head to my asshole. But like, it's not good. And right. The reason why I bring this up is because like, we're talking about, you think a quick fix will just like all of a sudden your life is better. But like going right. to a chiropractor, what she was saying is that there's no way for them to target your body in specific ways with that type of chiropractor stuff. What they're doing mm-hmm. is, of course, maybe lessening tension or whatever. But then 2 days later, you're going to have the exact same pain and issues you were having before. It's like right. a very quick fix that's not sustainable.
Right. And that's like the same thing with your mindset, which I've been going through a lot of, like, cause you know, I did that thing where I would beat myself up. If I would wake up in the morning and be like, you know, have that existential dread that you can't explain. My yes. old therapist used to call it the moody morning. Mm. And I used to be mad at myself. Like, why am I sad? Why is my life not perfect? But why am I sad about it? What's wrong with me? And that's the same thing with between jobs. You're like, I'm trash. I only got that last job because I tricked them into thinking I wasn't trash. And now I'm finally going to be homeless. Like I've been expecting myself to be all of these years. But like, truly, like, I think it's like once you really think, what are the facts is like what I've been trying to think a lot of. Like, what are the facts? The facts are literally every time I get super, super stressed about pretty much about work, because that's the one that always gets me. That's when things turn around. Or because I'm always working, I'm always grinding, because I'm doing that, I'm going to keep working. And then you start to develop relationships with people and you're like, it's like, listen, like 3 years ago, I was on a show that was shooting in New York. And when it got mm-hmm. canceled, I thought my life was over, because I was like, well, that was the only big job I'm ever gonna get, and now ain't nobody, they didn't know me because the show didn't take off. So I was like, nobody knows who I am, you know, I have to start all over, and I'm never gonna do this. I'm gonna have to go back to waiting tables.
Was it the opposition?
Yeah, it was the opposition. And I was so like, I was devastated. Like, it felt like,
well, and also,
I don't
can I tell
know.
you were so good on that show. I
Thank
loved you.
You
on that show, but continue.
Thank
so the
you.
Show so the show ended, and then you were like, fuck, I'm done for.
Yeah, but I think it's like you forget like all of the work you have. I mean, listen, you know, Hollywood is not a meritocracy. Like, it's not always like, oh, I did A and B, so now I'm going to get C. No, it doesn't necessarily work like that. But the work that you do and the products that you put out and the way you kind of like hustle and start to meet people, it does pay off. When your resume gets built, you know, it does. People see it and then they mm-hmm. want to keep working with you. And so I started to just realize, like, that's what I started to just change my mindset of being like, okay, maybe I'm a little bit scared because I, you know, freelancing sucks. Mm-hmm. It's trash. It sucks. If you have $1 million, if you got $10, it sucks because you don't know where the next dollar is coming from. But when you start to think of it as, I'm literally building my resume. I'm constantly still auditioning, still putting my work out there, still doing, you know, even social media, whatever it is.
Yes.
So it's going to be okay. I don't know what it's going to be, but it's going to be okay. You know?
I swear to God, Nicole, you were sent from the universe to me. It's like, I just so identify with what you're saying. And I think that I've been trying to learn that for the past year, and I'm starting to finally see the positive outcomes of just like changing your mindset. And also, the big thing I've learned in the past week in therapy is two words, which are zoom out. Just like, not if I fixate on a small failure, then what you're saying is how I feel. Is that I'm like, well, I'm a piece of shit. I'm never going to amount to anything. I'll never work again, et cetera, et cetera. But then when you zoom out and say, you know what? I actually accomplished X, Y, and Z, and not even accomplished, but I also had a great moment with my nephew. I got to talk. It's like you start to actually keep track of the things that A, are valuable to you, but B, that actually amount to the full life you want, and not just that whatever the small failure you think was. And I really suffer with that. And I definitely am like really starting to feel this good momentum forward and progress, but without having the awareness and then feeling that you're going to be miserable forever, that's what gets you stuck into that loop of then nothing will get better. And then inevitably, like, if you continue to think that way, it makes it harder for you to progress and move forward and actually accomplish the things you want. So I think this is, and also like in watching your career too, is like, anyone who's listening to this, if you're not following Nicole, you are going to now, because obviously she's such a light, but like you're the stuff you've done, like the scene in Shrill, I was rewatching that scene. It's so fucking funny. And like, I'm sure people listening have watched the it's the first season, right?
Yeah. First season, episode two.
Okay. Episode two, 80 goes to the strip club, and it's like, you're talking about how you have to dance when there's someone there, and she's just trying to eat the really good food. And it's like such a funny scene, but like, I think that what you are doing, like, you have a great podcast, you have these great roles, your videos online are so fucking funny. I think what I've learned from you is like, if you are just constantly putting yourself out there and doing your hustle, it's like the universe has no choice but to deliver.
deliver. And you know what else? Was because you mentioned a couple of things in there that I didn't always do. I mean, obviously the podcast is new, but not even just that. I never made videos on the internet. I didn't used to tweet all that much. And then I realized, like, once I started doing that, because I'd started doing that because I was bored, because I wasn't working that much. And I was only an actor at the time. And only being an actor means you're only waiting your ass by the phone most of the time. You know what I mean? And so I started being like, I have to have some kind of creative output. I feel like I'm going crazy in Los Angeles. And so I started making videos and started tweeting more. And then they started doing well, which was great, you know? And then, like, then it was me. Because then you're in control. And then that way you're in control of something, right? When you're completely at the beck and call of, like, Hollywood or, like, whoever the hell. Like, you're not going to be able to be happy. And you're not going to feel settled inside because you're not even going to always be playing. Like, you don't – not every part is that awesome stripper part. You know, a lot of them are like, I'm, you know, boring teacher number two or whatever. And you're like, this job, this is not me. But yeah, so it's like once I started being more in control and diversifying my output, I mean, for real, like now it's like I flew here as a writer to, you know, to go work on a show that I'm writing on. And I'm working on a show, I mean, with one of my idols is hosting this show. It'll come out later. I won't talk about it now because I don't know if I'm supposed to. But it's like just this thing where it's like it comes together because you continue to like to do what you can do. That's all you can do is what you can do. You can't like control if you're going to get hired. You can't control if you're going to end up to buying an Andy Cohen, you know, loft in Soho.
Right.
But you can control like your podcast, like your presence online of like what you put out, who, and then who sees what from you. It's so important. That's how I became a writer. Like I wrote because I would write jokes on Twitter and then people would be like, hey, do you want to write on this show? And I'm like, sure. I mean, I don't know how to do that, but yeah, why not? You know?
Well, speaking of the kind of the writing you do and the videos you put out, I'm sure a million people talk to you about the video that you have that's like what people's faces look like at the end of the video. And then it's just like fully devastated, like, you know, smile face or just like, first of all, I mean, I don't even think I have a question. I think that is that like the video that people ask you about the most?
Always. And it's funny because, you know, this year with or last year and this year with Zoom, it had a resurgence for sure. And then also now whenever I'm on a Zoom and people have seen the video and like I'm about to get off, they're like, oh, it's like that video. And I'm like, like, it's just it's funny. So then I always feel this pressure to like not let my face go dead so that they don't think I'm doing the video face, you know?
Well, also, but one of your videos that I thought was so fucking funny was when you were saying a rich person with rich parents tries to deny the fact that they're rich. Because one of my favorite types of people, first of all, I think that archetype is very tough to be around when someone is filthy rich. And then they're, but one of my favorite types of people is a person who is rich and isn't embarrassed by it. And they're just like, oh, yeah, we're going to boo, 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 boo. And it's like, fuck yeah. It's like you know, there's so many things with privilege and with wealth and like there's an issue with it. But I think if you are the product of rich parents and you are owning the fact that you come from money and you're not an asshole about it, I think that's actually a rare type of person that I like to be around.
Extraordinarily rare. And I have had one friend, I think I said something like, do you live where I think you live? And they were like, yeah, my parents bought it for me. They have money. And I was like, oh, that's a beautiful. You just said the thing. You know what I mean? Because I was like, there's no way you can afford that. But you just said the thing.
And they answered
it. And they said it with no pretension, no like, you know, they just were like, this is what it is. But, you know, it was, yeah, it's such a rare type because there's something about rich people that it's like, I always wonder, like, is this in the DNA somewhere where like they're programmed, you know, Chad Rivington III is told from age 2, pretend you're poor, like the pores, so the pores don't get mad at you. Like, we just tell us y'all rich. It's okay. It's sometimes it's better.
Do you ever watch The Real Housewives?
No, I don't.
So it's okay. It's okay. Cause there's a part where, on Beverly Hills right now, Garcelle will ask Sutton, who's like very fucking rich, like really rich. Garcelle's like, so where's all your money from? And she asks in a really direct, beautiful way. And the rich, really rich person's like very offended by that. And it's speaking to essentially like, how dare you ask where I get my money? It's like, well, actually, no. How dare you just not tell me where, if you're this wealthy, and by the way, this person got it because they probably come from money, but also was in a marriage with like a multi-billionaire and they got divorced. And then in California, they got half of it. So it's like, there is no shame in that. You got your money. And now you are, you know, wearing couture and live that truth. I mean, it's like the day that I become filthy rich and if someone asks me, I'll be like, I played Jim Parsons' ex in the Big Bang Theory reboot. Like, I don't fucking know. It's like, I think that the shame around money I find so frustrating because that is why I don't know anything about money, I think, is because there are people that A, don't talk about it, and B, I think we live in a world that if you want to be like money fluent, you have to be really aggressive about learning how to do it. And if you don't actually have that instinct, then you don't know anything. And I am learning as I go, but I don't know anything.
Yeah, I think it's ridiculous. I mean, I think it's ridiculous. We never learn taxes. We never learn how to invest. We never learn about stocks and bonds. We don't learn about any of that stuff when we're growing up. And I think that there's also, like, just in general, such a huge culture of politeness that I don't know if it's like American or what. And politeness is dishonest a lot of times. And I don't like that. Like with dating, I have all these theories. Like, I think that's why people ghost, because they don't want to be mean. And it's like, bitch, yes. I would rather you tell me you don't want to date me any day than just disappear, you know, when I had a nice time with you.
And so it's like stuff like that. Of like, where yeah, they
tell
stand.
Me. Tell me how you got your money. Tell me how you got your apartment. You know, tell me how you got your job. And that's the thing with jobs, too. A lot of times in, like, Hollywood industry, people are like, oh, you know, I just, like, it's just kind of, like, lucked into it. And some stuff, yeah, you do kind of luck into. But some stuff, it's like I said, I made videos. I did tweets. I was, you know, relentless online. I was relentless with my agents. I was, you know, I was in my apartment for months and never dated. And that's how I got the jobs. You know what I mean? So it's, like, stuff like that. And it's, like, with money, just tell us. Your mommy paid for your apartment. I would much rather hear that than you just tell me, like, oh, we're not that rich.
Yeah, I lucked into my purchased home. It's like, no, you didn't. What I also agree with that is, like, when people are being polite and you're actually getting lied to, it fucks you both over in the end. But, like, I had a moment. I'm in kind of a, creatively, I'm actually, like, feeling like this podcast is doing great. I'm making video. It's like, though, that part is good. But as an actor, I actually, before the pandemic, like, had great things going. I was working a lot, but I just, like, maybe with Zoom auditions, they're seeing more people. I haven't booked, like, a commercial in a long time. And I had a moment, I'll make it a one sentence story, because who the fuck cares about the actor thing? But what the thing is interesting is I had a callback where I went in four separate times to this audition and I was convinced I booked it. I was just like, we vibed, I booked it. And then I got an email that I did not book it. And I was like, well, I don't. And so I asked my agent what happened and she didn't really know. She was kind of guessing. I was like, you know what? Instead of me just sitting here and like not taking ownership that I feel like I booked that and I emailed the casting director directly and I just said, hey, that was so much fun. I thought, you know, I booked it. Do you know what happened? And they literally told me point blank, really good job. You were the director's first choice. The client ended up going with a second choice and we're not sure why, but we'll definitely see you again. And that was it. And I was like, okay. Mm-hmm. I now understand that, like, and the thing is, that makes total sense to me. You're trying to please a million people and like one person, and it's like, great, I didn't take it personally, that's what it is. But I think that just knowing that made me feel so much better, and also knowing that I'm a fully adult human that is allowed to ask questions if I want to learn the truth about something, and because I can take it, I think advocating for yourself is just the most important thing.
And to remind people, like, I deserve an answer. I deserve a conversation. Like, you're not always going to get closure or clarity from every situation. Like, fair. You don't have to, you can't necessarily demand that of everyone, and you're not always going to get it. And sometimes you just have to keep it moving without getting that. Like, you know, that's just how life is. But if there's an opportunity to ask someone, like, hey, that felt really good. What happened? Or like, hey, we went on a couple dates and I thought you were pretty great. Like, are you ghosting? Do you not want to hang out anymore? If not, that's totally cool. Just kind of wondering what's up. Like, because I have started to do that. Like, just started to say shit to people. And honestly, like you said, you got results from that conversation.
Yes.
And you can go home being like, okay. And then, like, me having conversations with guys of being like, hey, like, what's going on? You seem like you're being weird. Or one guy I was like, you know, you seem like you don't want to hang out again. And, like, I'm just curious. Do you want to or not? Answer the question.
What do you say?
And he said he was just like, did the thing where he was like, you know, oh, COVID, or I'm not ready to date right now. And I was like, totally fine. Whatever you say, totally fine. I'm glad that you just answered me though. Cause it's like, instead of trying to ghost me and then kind of every now and then kind of lead me on, you know, I'm going to let you go cause you're trying to let me go, but you're not doing it. You know what I mean? And it was like a situation where he kind of said like he wanted to be friends, but then he clearly wanted to be friends with benefits, but he wasn't being honest about it. And so I was like, bye, we done. Because that's the thing. Just tell me what you want. If I wanted to, we can do it. If, you know, it's, that's the thing. It's like, I just think that people, they worry so much about being polite that you don't get straight answers from people. And that does nobody any favors. It
and
really
then
doesn't.
You're essentially lying. And then you're both on two different pages and then no one's happy.
Yeah. Cause then you're wasting your energy if you're not telling the other person. Like, I mean, of course, with acting jobs, people are never going to be like, you weren't the choice, or like, you were one person's choice, but not other people. It's very rare that they do that unless you get really close. Then you can ask and like, that makes sense. But yeah, like with relationships, I mean, it's such a waste of energy to like be like, oh, sorry, I'm working tonight. I can't hang out like 22 times over and over again. Like, oh, let's maybe tomorrow. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm working. It's like, just tell me you don't want to hang out. That's fine. That,
it totally is.
Waste less time. Like, I used to do that with people, like, when they, because, you know, you live in New York, so you experience that, where when you live in New York, it's like, there's a person visiting every fucking day, I swear. And they're like, let's go out. And you're like, I actually live here. I don't just, like, party here.
That's the thing, is I swear I learned, like, the older I got, I was like, you're allowed to say, tonight's not the night for me. And you don't, you sometimes don't have to give a reason. You can just say, like, I'm just not feeling it. And it, yeah, period. That's you're just like, that's the answer. And that's the answer. It's like, it's okay though. It's like, you know, the couch is an okay place to be when you want to be there. And like, I like where I am right now, this is my home. This is my girl. This is my everything. I love her so much. And if I don't want to treat her poorly, if anybody wants me to leave this couch and I don't want to, I'm not going to.
Exactly. And you don't have to give a reason. That's what I started doing with people. I started just, instead of wasting my energy and being like, oh, how many days are you here? Oh, I can't do this day, but maybe tomorrow, maybe that. Finally, I just told one person, I was just like, listen, I don't really feel like hanging out right now. I'm working a lot and I just kind of feel like relaxing when I'm not working. So have a great trip. Talk to you later. And they seemed like they were maybe mad because they didn't respond to me. But I was like, I don't care if you're mad because I told you the truth. You know the answer. And now I don't have to go out with your ass. So
that is an Instagram infographic that I did read that did make sense to me, was that we are not responsible for other people's emotions. Like, and that is okay. But speaking of being responsible for other people's emotions, what you are responsible for right now is telling me, why are you obsessed with gay people? What the hell are you doing here, Nicole? I realize that when I have people that identify as heterosexual on this podcast, it starts to veer towards a Z-way level of like, how many gay friends do you have? And like, face of the camera. But like, do you agree that there are a lot of gay men that love your comedy?
That love my comedy? Do I agree? I think so, yeah. That love
they
comedy
do,
in general or
we
my comedy?
Do your Nicole Thurman. It's just something about your sensibility, I think, has such a queer audience, because it's like the second I saw your Zoom call ending video, the second I saw all, I was just like, this person gets it. And you know what? Maybe like instinctively, I knew that your mom is Jewish, that you're from the Midwest. I don't fucking know. I just felt this like connection with your work that was like, but I think essentially just because you clearly are a gay icon that deserves like that status. So I really do mean this in not a probing, gross way, but like, do you have a lot of queer people in your life that you connect with?
Queer people in my life that I connect with? Absolutely. Yeah, all over the place. And I do think that now that I think about it, I do have like a lot of, I think, gay men and women that follow me. And I remember my biggest gay moment that I had, I guess you could say, was when one of my tweets was on Best of Grindr.
Instagram thing, right? Yes.
And I was like, oh my God. And I was getting like all these followers and I was like, why are all these men following me? Like, what's going on? And then I was like, oh my God, Best of Grindr.
Wait, what was the tweet?
It was, remember when Lil Nas X did that performance? Or no, not the video of Call Me By Your Name.
Going down
was,
to
like,
hell.
Sliding. Mm-hmm. And that was like a meme for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so my meme about him was like, it was just like the vaccination. Like, there's a vaccination site, but you have to go right now. Like, you can get vaccinations, but you have to go right now. It was back when the vaccinations were harder to get. And
sure,
so then
sure,
the
sure.
image was him sliding down the pole to go get a vaccination. So
Oh, see, that's the thing. It's like you embrace the vaccination moment. You embrace the Lil Nas X video of him stripper pulling down to hell. And next thing you know, you're on the best of Grindr, like million followed gay account. And that all tracks for me. That all makes sense. Yeah. And God, I love it.
I never thought about it before, but I don't know. I don't know what it would be. I don't want to even assume because then I feel like I would say something stupid. But like, I don't know if just like expressiveness or just like my energy or I don't know what it is. But I would love to be called the gay icon. That's amazing.
You are. I think that. And honestly, like as much as it's like me patting ourselves on the back, but I think I take a lot of pride and a lot of queer people take a lot of pride in being like tastemakers of like of some artists think they've made it when they have the queer support. I mean, like obviously Gaga's obsessed with having a queer following and like Madonna, of course, has so many people. And like, I mean, as a queer community, we are so lucky to have our icons, and I do think that the icons feel lucky to have us. It's like a like a beautiful love-filled relationship.
It is definitely like a form of acceptance that, I mean, listen, if you had a bunch of straight dudes with khakis saying we love your comedy, you something's wrong. You gotta change your comedy. So the people you want to love your comedy are the gays. The tastemakers, honey, not the men with Oakleys on the back of their head.
God forbid. Oh, my God. I swear, Nicole, like I forget sometimes how little I spend time in a room with straight people, especially the ones with khaki and Oakleys. And when I'm with them, I'm like, oh, you do exist. It's like I forgot that that's the norm, is that across the country there are straight men that wear khakis and have Oakleys. And when I'm then around them, I feel my, like if there's a dog close by, I'll just pet the dog and just use it as a support animal. I don't exactly know how to act. And
yeah,
of course it all comes back from like being bullied in high school, and like I know there are some good straight men, but
yeah,
they're not, the press right now is not all good.
No, it's not. There's not a lot of good press right now. Yeah, they're not doing their best work. I don't think they ever really have.
That's
but
probably partly why I love being in New York or LA, is that you can surround yourself with people. You have many other choices than the straight khaki community.
Yeah, and I like that too. I think it's nice to be. Obviously, I would never surround myself with the straight khaki community at all. But it's like it's nice to be around people that are just like living how they want to live, and like it's a more freeing culture. It's more like live your life, be who you are, and I like that's way more my energy.
And I think that's probably why you and I connect, is that you embrace your truth, and there's a sense of embracing what makes us different. And I think that obviously, like as a gay person, like I am different. And I think that when you see someone doing that, straight or not, I mean, and not to get too deep about it, but I've been really thinking hard lately of when you are young and you are queer, you are really struggling with, will I be accepted? Will I be able to live a life that has a semblance of happiness when I'm living in a world that doesn't want me? And like, that's really dark. But then when you come out and you have that beautiful moment of, wait a minute. And this is, of course, me talking about myself, and there are so many difficult moments for people that come out and it's not good for them. But my dream, of course, for everyone is that they come out and they realize that they can find, whether it's their family by birth or their chosen family, that they can be embraced. And it's so beautiful. So that's a real thing.
Yeah.
I find what's really tough right now as an adult is that I'm realizing that, unfortunately, it still can be kind of hard. I mean, you can still, I think I was talking to Carrie O'Donnell on this podcast about when he was walking around a part of California and he said to his fiance, are we allowed, or maybe his fiance said to him, are we allowed to hold hands here? And it's like, you do sometimes have to have those questions. And and Matt and I are talking about having children, and it's just it's difficult for any couple, but in any person. But I think for a lot of gay people, it can be, there's a lot of obstacles. And so I'm having this resurgence of, man, it's like I married someone I love. I'm living in a place that I love. Mm-hmm. But there are still these things that you're like, oh, wait a minute. You know, I have a ton of friends and family having babies that I genuinely have only happiness for them. But yeah, it is sometimes kind of hard to be like, but it is what I do want is going to be a lot harder just because of the way that I am. And it's like, it's just a bit of it's a tough thing. But I think that to bring it all back to this conversation is that when you then see someone that really is embracing why they are different, you realize it makes you feel seen even though they are different from you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, it's, that's, cause that is the hardest part sometimes. Like that's what I was talking about even earlier with my mom of like, even from being from New York and living in Kansas all of a sudden and being Jewish, she was like, I don't know how to like process this. Cause it's hard. Yeah. It's hard to just, and I think about, I mean, I just think about it all the time when like you see like a trans person, it's like just to live your life, just to be who you are. It's like such a challenge and like people are going to confront you. My friend, like my friend and I went out the other day and I almost got in a freaking fight with this girl because my friend is in fashion. So she's wearing like a cool outfit and this like Karen type woman, basic ass with her not style. She looked like she was wearing a doily. She was like asking my friend why she was wearing this jacket. And I was like, any kind of, if you're at all against any kind of grain of whatever normal is, whatever the hell mm-hmm. that even is at this point, then people are going to judge you at every turn. And it's like, obviously, if you're gay or trans or, you know, non-binary, that's a whole other world of like, just to literally exist in your skin is going to offend someone for some reason. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, then the people that see that and recognize it and understand it, they do gravitate towards each other. And that's a beautiful thing. I mean, that doesn't make it easier. Yes, you're, like you said, you have your chosen family, but then you still have to go out in the world and you still have to deal with things like fertility and all those things. But yeah. I do always feel kind of like honored to like have gay friends or like just, you know, to have people be like, we love what you do. Like we, you know, you're a queen well, or like again, whatever they say.
Are,
yeah. It's like great.
We're tastemakers and we have, when you like Nicole Thurman, you have taste and that is the facts. Well, before we, you know, have to log off this gorgeous call that I could truly talk to you for hours and hours and hours. I want to ask a very important question. If the world was ending, and you could only save one character actress, do you have a choice of who that would be?
I feel like you probably get this answer a lot, but Jennifer Coolidge.
Gorgeous answer. The thing is that I have gotten it, but not as much as you would think. And you know what is so topical about this answer is that the White Lotus finale is tonight. So, of course, when this podcast will be like 2 days after this that comes out. But like whoever is not watching the White Lotus, you must. And I think Jennifer is, you know, there's this thing going on Twitter now that's like gay men are always saying like, no one ever talks about this person. And of course, they're acting in an HBO show like every week. It's like, yes, we are. It's just we like to obsess over one person for a week and then pretend that we forgot that they existed. But Jennifer Coolidge is having a moment right now that it's like, thank fucking God.
She's having a moment. And it was like one of those things where because I was like, who are character actors? So I Googled. And then as soon as she popped up, I was like, I can't go with anybody else because I have been watching The White Lotus. And she's one of those actresses that I've always thought was funny. But oh my God, on that show, it's like every move she makes is comedy. She's so incredibly funny. And also, like, she kind of, like, reps for, like, tall, curvy women, which I'm all about, too, because I'm tall. I'm not skinny. So it's, like, I like to see that on screen, you know?
Yes. And anything she says, she, like, it's what I think she is doing more now that is really incredible is that she's having her same humor and brilliance with that. But there's also, like, this, like, depth to her of, like, just, like, the deep human condition of, like, I'm just going to sit and wait for you to call me. Or she's just, like, it's just, like, she's, like, who among us have not just said, mm-hmm. yeah, of course, whenever, I'll talk to you later, but you're just going to wait by your phone and like every time it vibrates, you're going to hope it's them. It's like, no, she says to the guy on the show, like,
I'm lying in bed, wait for you to text me. And she said that whole speech about, I don't know if we're giving a spoiler alert, but spoiler alert for The White Lotus, when she talks about, I just want him to see the crazy up front. I've said that so many times. Like, I don't like playing games with dudes. I don't like the dating game. I don't like trying to appear demure or like whatever the hell. And so like, I feel the same way where it's like, all you want to do is just show him all the insecurities, show them all the bullshit. And then if they like it, you date.
And that's, I think what I try to tell people, because listen, have I figured everything out? Fuck no, not at all. But what I do feel happy about is the way that I met Matt was basically like it. I think that showing your freak flag as early as possible is the way to go. And we deserve people that love what makes us freaks.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I can't even imagine, like, when people say, like, oh, maybe you're intimidating or whatever the hell people would say. It's just like, Okay, well, then they can go. At first, it's annoying. I'm not going to lie. I've been single forever. I'm still single. It's like I'm getting old and I don't really love that. But at the same time, like, I really like myself. And if somebody doesn't like me, then I don't really want to be around them. Because what am I going to have to do? Pretend to be something different or quieter or whatever? And it's like, no. That's not gonna, nobody's going to be happy doing that. So, yeah. I love it. And I do love that she's like that.
Oh, I think it's such a brilliant answer. And I just, anytime I even get to think about Jennifer Coolidge as a gift and a
beauty
and like, and truly. And so speaking of iconic women, the final question we ask on this podcast is, Nicole Thurman, what is the best Whoopi Goldberg film?
Honestly, Ghost. I couldn't even think of another one.
I think that's such a good answer. You know what? A lot of people don't say Ghost. And what do you... Yeah, but like, I mean, I think Ghost is so good. And also, rest in power, Patrick Swayze. But I think that movie probably made a lot of men gay because of just like the sheer sex of it all.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's very hot. It's a very hot movie for everyone. And then Whoopi Goldberg, when she's like, Molly, you in danger, girl. Like, come on now. It doesn't get better than that. Like,
it doesn't. Like, it was a meme before memes were memes.
Exactly. It totally was. Yeah. So she's just so great in that movie. I feel like I barely even remember many details from the movie, but I just remember I loved it. I loved her in it. And then I would quote that line like so much. My mom still quotes it all the time. Like, we're always making
you
that
in
joke,
danger,
so.
Girl.
It's too good. It's too good. She had great hair in that movie. She just looked great. She's awesome.
I love, what a good throwback to Whoopi and Ghost. Well, I think from Whoopi to another icon, Nicole Thurman, thank you so much for coming on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. Is there anything that you would like to plug before we say goodbye?
Yeah, I have a podcast as well called The Scroll Down with Marcela Arguello, who's my co-host. And then I'm also on a cartoon called Jellystone that's on HBO Max. So watch that. It's very fun. There's, I think, 10 episodes up right now, but there's a lot more coming. So
come on now, Jellystone on HBO Max.
Okay.
Well, Nicole Thurman, you are a star. I can't wait to see you again. And truly, thank you.
Thank you. This was so nice. Thank you.
What a dream that Nicole Thurman is. I am so happy she came on. I plugged all of her socials in the description. Also, that Patreon link is there if you want to join that party. You can hear the unedited episode, and I have the full video episode up there as well. The faces, the facial expressions of it all. Follow along my Instagram as well as linked there at Eric Wills, Gay Ass Podcast Instagram. And if you could do me a big favor and leave a 5-star review, it really helps more people get their eyes and ears on this podcast. And just tell one friend that you're obsessed with it. I've gotten so many messages recently that I was literally talking about it in therapy just the other day about how happy it makes me feel. And next week's guests are another ones from my dream list. So, God, it's gonna be good. Love y'all. Bye.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.